Welcome, everybody, to the Live from the Code Bar podcast, recorded from the Code Theme Bar of Fenwood Manor. I'm your host, Robert. On today's show, I have a very real scoop. As far as I know, my guest has never done an interview before, specifically on his treasure hunt. So today, I have Pete Wilder, creator of the long-running treasure hunt, The Oracle Lost in Time. Welcome, Pete, to the show.
Hi, Robert. Thank you for having me on.
Pete, for all those that don't obviously know you and know the Oracle, in your words, could you let everybody know what the Oracle Lost in Time is?
Yeah, sure. So the Oracle Lost in Time is a treasure hunt, an armchair treasure hunt. It's a hardback format inspired by a previous armchair treasure hunt called Masquerade by Kit Williams. It's a project I started over 20 years ago with my children. I'd been through a divorce, and my kids used to come round every other weekend. We'd curl up on the sofa, watch Friends on a Friday evening, buy pizzas. But because I had such limited time because of the divorce and my access was limited, I wanted to kind of maximize the time we had together. And whilst we were having a great time watching Friends, eating pizza, I wanted to do something more constructive, more interactive. So I suggested one weekend that why don't we work on this project together? And so we started it off. We had this concept, you know, from the beginning. It was going to be some kind of treasure hunt book similar to Kit Williams' Masquerade. And so one week we'd say, okay, so what shall we do this week? What's the picture that we're going to show? And we carried on coming up with these ideas and suggestions. After a few months, the children got a bit bored and it kind of went on the back burner. And we went back to usual stuff, Friends and pizzas and swimming Saturday mornings and so on and so on. Anyway, after a couple of years, I had these like draft images and so on. I felt inspired to go on and complete the project. Contacted a guy who actually was based in Argentina, it turned out. There was an online exchange where you could, I think it was called Elance, and put a project out there and people could quote. So I asked somebody to quote me to produce a dozen drawings for the book. And so I started slowly pursuing this. It was kind of long-winded because, you know, I had really rough sketches, so I had to describe the contents of the images via email back and forth, and then I would get a sketch back, and then I would comment on that, and we'd have several iterations before agreeing on the final draft. And this actually went on for 2 or 3 years before it finally got completed. You know, there were some long breaks in between. I think a guy in Argentina wasn't really expecting it to work that way. He thought he was going to get, you know, $1,200 in a quick turnaround, but that was never my intention. But anyway, eventually we got there. So I now had these digital drawings, pictures, artwork, whatever, and I thought, well, I better do something about it. So I took a sabbatical from work, a couple of months off in the summer, and playing golf every morning, but I was quite disciplined and forced myself to come home in the afternoon and start writing some kind of a story that would make sense, that would link all these pictures together and give it some kind of a, what's the word I'm thinking of? Yeah, just a theme that would make sense. And when I'd done that, I thought, well, I'm going to need a master poem like Kit Williams had wrote and written. So I produced the master riddle, and then I started getting inspired and found myself writing a poem that matched up with one of the pictures. And once I'd started it, I couldn't stop. So eventually I wrote 12 poems to go for each of the pictures. And that's how it happened. Got the manuscript together, and a friend of mine was working in publishing, and he did the production, found me a printer, and finally self-published, I think, December 2003, if memory serves me right.
That's so cool. So it took a long time to come together. So that was going to be one of my actual early questions, was how long it took. So getting it all together and actually finally getting it out there, you said 2003. So 2003, 2004 is about the time when this started. So the token, which is obviously what everybody's looking for, has been out there that long. The token's hidden somewhere in the United Kingdom, correct?
That's correct.
And according to your website, and obviously many, many postings through mysterious writings and everything like that, it is accessible to the general public at all times, right?
That's correct also, yes.
Excellent, excellent. I just want to get those things cleared up, that it's still out there and it is still available. And there is a prize available for this hunt as well. It's a 20-year-old hunt, which is amazing when you talk about things like these sorts of things these days. Sometimes some don't even last a couple of weeks. This one's been out there for quite a while. The minimum prize fund, as per your website, is $5,000 right now, obviously plus or minus with increase of sales and stuff like that. I'm going to get right into some basic nitty-gritties of this. Obviously, it's been out there for 20-something years. My first question is going to be, I know you're very active through answering through mysterious writings. People have been able to post on there what they think is the answer. And that's more than a lot of creators will do. They just will sit back and just wait till they get the right answer. So you don't actually have to go to this place. You can post through mysterious writings and you will respond. But let me ask you this. How close of all the people that you've ever seen through all of these posts, is there somebody that's been close, maybe similar location or close by the location, they just haven't given the right answer?
Interesting question. Just before I answer it, let me clarify a couple of things. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned about the physical location of the token. I cannot confirm that it's physically intact in situ, but it doesn't really matter because the whole point was that if somebody came across it who didn't know about the hunt, it would have no relevance. There's no intrinsic value. And they'd be, you know, so the point is with Kit Williams, somebody actually found the treasure physically in the ground without really solving the problem, the puzzle, as I understand it. So I wanted to avoid that.
That's, and then one person ended up digging it up and not actually realizing that they'd dug it up right. And then somebody else dug it up that did know what they were doing. So there was all drama about that. So yeah, no, exactly. I know what you mean by that.
Okay. So just wanted to clarify that point. So it doesn't really matter. The location is predefined and, you know, I've no reason to believe that it's not there anymore, but there is always a possibility somebody may have stumbled across it. In terms of how near has anybody got? Well, that's a difficult question. What I can say is some people are thinking along the right lines. Others are way off the mark. You know, you can be geographically near, but at the same time, miles away from solving the problem. Does that make sense?
No, I mean, in this particular hunt, it does, because you are taking inspiration from Masquerade, which had a lot of things to work out to get there. And obviously there's going to be those sorts of things in Oracle that you can look at them. And when you look at the book, you'll see riddles, you'll see pictures, you'll see the story. But yeah, even just in my time working on the hunt, and I've been working on it on and off for a couple of years now, I can see there's been lots of different locations that I can see have worked, and obviously they're not right. And there's been a couple of locations I've been looking at, like maybe they might work. So I do understand what you mean by that. Yes. So obviously the story, I'm going to get a little bit more into the story then. So the story is, as per the site, a space time travel adventure designed obviously for children mainly, along with the puzzle that you have. That's the story of two young brothers. They're named Richard and Jordan. Richard is the older brother, aged 14, and Jordan is aged 5. So Richard is the more laid back of the two brothers, and Jordan is the more inquiring and has less fear. They do sneak into their father's laboratory to investigate his latest experiment, and that's when everything seems to happen. So similar to other books that were inspired by Masquerade as well, it has an overarching story throughout the whole thing, but in between it has the poems, it has the images, everything is as it's supposed to happen. It's supposed to come together for a solve for to know where the token is. On this as well, there's not just been the book itself that's been released through your website, and you've been very vocal about it on social medias and stuff like that as well, but you also have a bunch of extra clues that have been released, none recently, but they were released for a while there, that have also helped, you know, guide people along and that sort of thing as well. They can all be found on your website. So using all of this, I mean, obviously people are supposed to use it all together to find the location. They'll contact you and they'll win. But you keep mentioning that you thought about Masquerade. So one of the big clues that I had a couple of people reach out to me when I said I was going to be doing an interview is that you mentioned about a cross similar to the cross that obviously was hiding the Masquerade rabbit or hare, sorry. And so a lot of people are asking about the cross. Is it a physical cross that somebody needs to find?
Yes, I guess it is, yes. You know, I'm reluctant. And I'll tell you, you know, because I found myself, as more and more interest grew, you know, you kind of want to be helpful. It's sort of human nature. But at the same time, not giving the answer away. And then I think you had Nick on, Nick Spearer on a couple of months ago. He was the one, who mentioned you to me. And I had met him in London. He was a big, avid fan of the Oracle. We chatted. So we'd built up a relationship. He and one or two others were kind of saying, look, Pete, don't give away too much information because we're really enjoying this puzzle and we want to work it out for ourselves. So I took that on board. And so I decided that's it. One more clue, which I published in three parts over an extended period of time. And I basically said, right, based on the feedback I've had, no more clues, because I realized that I'm nervous to give any more information. I do believe there's plenty of information out there. It's not spelt out like in Masquerade, where there's a code, you know, the eyes and the fingers pointing out letters around the border letters, which then spell out the location. So I was determined from the beginning never to do anything like that. It's more a sense of take an holistic view, look at the clues, look at the story, look at the images, look at the poems, and build a sense in your mind. And, you know, there's a lot of people who have, in my opinion, they've gained that sense. So I can tell from the answers that they're submitting that they kind of think in along the right lines. But what they need to do next is to actually drill down, look into the detail, and work out the exact location. And that's where I would say people are at the moment. I haven't seen anybody really using the information in a way to pinpoint. You know, there's a lot of guesses out there.
Oh, absolutely. And as I said, my podcast and people that are listening know I'm not trying to get anything from you. That's definitely not what we're about here. I really just want to talk to you about the book itself. So when it launched back in 2003, 2004, so what sort of response did you first get as opposed to maybe as it's gone over the past 20 years? What sort of response has the response been kind of constant, or was it more upfront and less lately? What have you been looking at like with this hunt?
Interesting. So initially, I was contacted shortly after publication by a few organisations, one of them being the Armchair Treasure Hunt Club. I'm sure you must have come across those guys based in the UK. And they said they wanted to do a feature. So I sent them a copy of the book. We had a few sales. I gave away lots of copies to family members, charities. But to be honest, you know, I printed 1,000 copies originally. I've still got 200 or 300 in a cupboard under the stairs at home. So that tells you the number of hard copies that have been sold. It's in the hundreds. I started doing the PDF version, and let's just say that it's been interest on and off. Sometimes it goes really quiet for a few months. I mean, I can't remember the last time I made a sale. And then sometimes there'll be a blip and maybe 3 or 4 in a week. So it's like little peaks and troughs along the way. It's been, somebody described it to me the other day as a slow burn. I had to giggle because, yeah, you know, you mentioned the prize fund earlier. It's actually £5,000, not dollars.
Okay, so, sorry, my mistake there.
And what I said was, look, for every copy of the book that I sell, I will add £1 to the prize fund, and that includes PDFs. And I was hoping, like, maybe I'm going to sell 1 million, you know, I'll have £1 million prize fund, but that just hasn't happened. So I've guaranteed a minimum of 5,000, and I haven't made 5,000 sales yet. It's as simple as that. So that's why the prize fund is still at 5,000. But maybe after this podcast, there'll be a rush of orders and, you know, we can say say there's been an increase. But
excellent, and I hope for that as well. So if you are listening, go out and buy the book. So The Hunt, obviously, as I said, was released in 2004. So a big question I have is that obviously times have changed since 2004 between then and now. Much has grown up with technology and everything like that. And I know this was something that, if you know Forrest Fenn, he had to deal with his hunt, is that people were starting to use, you know, Google Earth and maps and stuff like that, as opposed to actually going in and searching. But do you still believe that there could be, that the book could be solved and that the puzzle could be found using just the book, maybe the clues, a map, and maybe even not even using the internet? Do you think that's still possible in this age that we live in?
Yes, I do. I do think it would help if you had some knowledge of the UK and the history of the UK. So if you're an Australian who's never been to the UK, it's not going to be as easy as someone who's lived in the UK all their life, who will be familiar with some of the themes, some of the history that's covered in the book. Nevertheless, the information's there for everybody to research on the internet. So in theory, yes, anybody could find it if they were determined to do so.
All right, excellent. And on that then, obviously, leaning into a little bit more, as you said, drilling down, but I'm not going to drill down too far, but that you've mentioned before that the book has a master riddle. Is this a master riddle that when somebody does do that drilling down, they're thinking about it the right way, like you said, are they going to have a aha moment where they are actually going to realize that that's the right answer? Or do you think it's going to take a little bit more than that?
Yeah, good question. I'm just trying to call. I don't have a copy handy. I'm just trying to remember the words of the master riddle, but essentially it's a nice intro. It kind of, there were some production issues, and I've made this clear over the past that the nature of the token that is alluded to in the master riddle isn't really important. So, you know, I'm not giving anything away by saying that. I've said it in the past. So everyone knows it was a CD. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the original intention. Because of practicalities, production issues, there was a last-minute change and a CD was used as the token. But the references in the master riddle talk about a different kind of token. And that's why I've said, look, it's not relevant really what the nature of the token is. It's all about the location of the token. So, but otherwise, yes, I think it's a fair master riddle. It kind of sets the scene. Yeah, I think it helps people to start thinking along the right lines.
Awesome. To go along with one of the earlier questions, but sort of with the master riddle and obviously the puzzle being solved, do you have an end plan? By that I mean, is there any plans for it's just going to keep going until it's found? Are there any plans for the possibility that maybe it might end? Obviously not soon, we hope, but are there plans for that sort of thing in the future? What sort of plans do you have for the continuation of this puzzle?
Well, I'm happy to let it run and run. You know, I think there's been one or two people suggesting, look, why don't you just give it up, tell everyone. And again, I think there's other people who say, no, we, you know, leave it out there. So look, from my perspective, I'm happy to let this run and run. I'm no spring chicken. I'm not getting any younger. So there's going to come a point, if it's not resolved or solved, when I may no longer be around, but I'll kind of deal with that at the time. But if it takes another 20 years, so be it.
I love that answer. We want you to keep going, that's for sure. I've had so much fun. I have the hardcover book myself, like I said, and I had you sign it for my son who got into treasure hunting because of me getting into treasure hunting. So it's signed to him, and I've had him look through it, and he's not quite at that stage yet where he's working them out like I am or seeing anything that I might have missed. But I'm hoping pretty soon those new eyes might see something that I missed, that's for sure. And
So if I can just jump in there, Robert. So that's exactly the whole idea of the book, was that the younger generation would work with an older generation and, you know, between them solve it, improve interactivity between the generations. And, you know, it's a learning project. I'm sure you will have learnt or discovered new lines of thought as a result of reading the book, whether it be historical or physical. So it's really good to hear you saying that you and your son are kind of planning to move forward on this, because that's exactly what I was hoping would happen when I wrote the book.
Definitely. And one of the things I love about a really good treasure hunt like this is that it really does open up the learning. I'll look at something and I'll be looking at it like one of the images, maybe it's the Roman page or something else, or the Greek or the Egyptian with the pyramids. And I'll look at it and I know some of that history. But then when I go a little bit more and I read a little bit more about it, and I'm like, okay, so I didn't know this about that, or I learned something new, or maybe, like I said, my son, he does learn something new about it that he didn't know before. Until recently, I did not know a lot about the Roman history in the UK, and this started me down a whole rabbit hole of learning more about the Romans in the UK, in England. I started binge watching like crazy that show Time Team and going all the way from about the beginning to the end of that. They do a lot of Roman excavations and stuff like that on the show. So I just fell into this total rabbit hole of Romans in the UK because of this book. And I just really enjoyed reading something about that and still reading about it now, even though, you know, I think I've moved past it with the book. I still enjoy reading a good story about that. On that then, on the whole thing, what sort of advice would you give to new hunters that are just picking up the book that maybe haven't read or really know too much about the Oracle, apart from maybe just listening to the podcast? What sort of advice would you give to a new hunter?
I think I would say if it's a parent or a child, whoever's the recipient of the book, they should work with an older generation. Read it, reread it, read the story, read the poems, look at the pictures, look at the border text, look at the clues. Try to build a sense in your mind of using a holistic point of view, using all the information that's available. I think there's a lot of people out there who are understanding the theme. So the important, so that's there. Now, there is enough information for those who are so inclined to drill down, look at the detail, and start to pinpoint where the actual prize is located. But I think a team effort, I would definitely recommend. It would help to have more than one pair of eyes and one point of view when trying to solve it.
Excellent. Now, that was going to be one of my questions that I know somebody did ask on one of the Facebook groups, is that do you think it would help if you worked in a team on this? So definitely sounds like, you know, both young and old, but it definitely sounds like a team would definitely help you out.
I would say so, yes.
Excellent. Now, on the puzzle and the book and everything like that, you said that obviously you had somebody help you with the images over time, but all the rest of the writing, the poems, the story and all that was all you. So where did the whole idea of Richard and Jordan come from, and this whole time travel thing? Is that something that you've had thoughts on before, or did you kind of make the story to fit more in with the puzzle idea that you had? Or which sort of came first, the whole idea of the story and then made it into the puzzle, or the puzzle made it into the story?
So basically, the concept was, it was a project with my children. So Richard and Jordan are my two sons. Jordan was much younger at the time, so he wasn't actually involved, but I have two daughters as well, Laura and Natalie, and they are referenced in the book. So the way it worked was myself, Richard and Laura sat down in the kitchen every other weekend, and we kind of decide an image that we wanted to use for the project. Then I produced, then I had the images produced. And then I found myself having to some kind of a coherent story that linked it all together. So that's the way it worked. The images came first, and I just sat down and said, right, well, how can I make some sense of this? How can I make a coherent story? And because they're all fairly random, we've got, you know, pictures of the moon, different countries, different times. That was the idea I came up with, this space time travel adventure and starring my two sons. Yeah, that was kind of it. I didn't know, I hadn't even heard of it, but there's another book, I can't remember now, another film actually. Somebody told me afterwards, oh, it's just like The Fabulous Adventures of somebody, I can't remember. But I didn't realise that at the time, but apparently there's a similar kind of story out there that pre-existed my book.
Okay, but it doesn't have a treasure hunt though, right?
No. But yeah, that was the only thing I could think of that would give a coherent story that could link all the images together in a sensible way that would make sense to the reader. And then, as I said, after that, decided to write the poems. They were sort of an added extra. And, you know, made it a bit, set it apart from Kit Williams' book, because he did his own paintings and drawings. So at least, you know, the storyline and all the poems are my original work.
So you mentioned, obviously, Masquerade quite a few times, and that was the focus of my first couple of podcasts when I did release this, because obviously that's what started off this whole, you could say industry, you can say community, but started off this whole thing was Masquerade. Before that, there really wasn't anything like this. Did you actually participate and have a go at working out Masquerade at the time?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I was a young man in my mid-20s, I think. Some colleagues at work mentioned it to me. One of them brought a copy of the book in, and, you know, I was entranced by it. I was aware that they were doing regular features, I think, in one of the Sunday newspapers, which helped with the popularity of Kit's project. So, yes, I was quite interested in it, and I remember there was a moment when I worked out there was a picture of a football field, a village green or something with some white squares, and they had numbers in them, and I realised they were atomic elements, and when you use the initials for the element, they actually spell out a message, and I thought I'd made a great breakthrough, but of course it was a red herring. But it was a really exciting moment for me to actually make that breakthrough and solve that particular puzzle. But of course, yeah, it was a rabbit hole, if you like. And then of course, finding out maybe 2 or 3 years after that the way it had been discovered, it wasn't a very satisfactory outcome. I didn't think. I seem to recall it was a guy who walked his dog regularly near the spot, and
well, he actually had help. Kit Williams' ex-girlfriend, actually, of all things. So she thing happened was that she kind of knew a little bit, and with the guy that walked his dog, like you said, they put the two and two together, and that's when they managed to dig it up. It was actually, they didn't actually fully solve the puzzle. They just dug it up by that sort of thing. It was a couple of teachers that came out that actually had fully solved it using actually the clues from the book. And so officially, like, I think it's even on their, on Wikipedia now, that they've been awarded as the winners, even though they didn't get that hair, because the guy that did get the hair, he sold it off pretty quickly so he could use it to fund other things. I think he funded some sort of a treasure hunt game, computer game that sort of didn't go anywhere. So, yes, you're right. In terms of satisfying endings, it wasn't a very satisfying ending, but it did lead to, obviously, so much more out there. Here in the US, we have The Secret, which was very, very much a clone, a copy, if you want to say, of Masquerade, but just taken to a bigger extent, where it was 12 images, 12 poems, put them together, and you find a location. And obviously, more and more books from then on, Fandango, obviously Oracle, even you can even say down to Forrest Fenn doing his treasure hunt as well.
I was going to say, so it's spawned an industry. I'm familiar with some of those projects you mentioned. I haven't really looked into them in too much detail. There was Maranatha. Did you remember that one?
Yeah.
That caught my attention. I got into that quite heavily, and I came across on an obscure website where the authors, having sort of withdrawn the hunt, did publish an explanation, Sacred Geometry, that was contained within some of the images, which I found very fascinating.
I think that might have been the Merlin's wand. I think that one was that one. I think that had a lot of sacred geometry in it and stuff. So yeah, no, I know that one as well.
Right, but yes, I'm familiar with a lot of these, but I haven't really delved into them too much. There was another website, a bit like Mysterious Writings, that predated Mysterious Writings. They had lots of, and I used to delve in there sometimes. Certainly, Maranatha was of interest, but I was aware of the other treasure hunts that were ongoing.
In the story of the Oracle, obviously we have lots of different topics in there. You have astronomy, you have physics, there's obviously the history. Are these all sorts of things that interest you? Is that why they're in there? Or, you know, can we use them to help us with the story? Again, not to give too much away here, of course, but obviously you make mention of the website, astronomy with the origin of the universe and physics with space-time travel. Obviously, they're all in the story. Are these something that kind of interests you?
Yeah, absolutely. I love astrophysics, Big Bang theory and so on. I find myself these days more and more defaulting to YouTube as my main TV. So I don't watch, you know, the BBC and ITV channels anymore. I just go to YouTube and try and pick up a physics video, or now I'm getting interested in artificial intelligence. So yes, all the subjects, they're things that have covered in the book that I have a personal interest in. Things like Knights Templar, the Crusades and that kind of stuff I've always found fascinating. Masons and the Knights Templar being their forerunners.
Very nice. I mean, there's, and anytime you mention Knights Templar and stuff like that, obviously the first word that always comes up when any search of that is always going to be the Knights Templar treasure or anything like that. So I know I've looked into them a fair share myself as well. Now I want to give you a chance to obviously let people know where they could find the book. All of everything that you're going to give me and everything I know already, I'm going to put into the show notes. But where can people find the book? And I want anybody that is listening that does not have this book yet to go out and get it, form a team, try working on it, try breaking this thing, you know, let's get it solved. But where can people find all this information about you, about the book and everything like that?
So there is a website, as you mentioned, oraclebook.net. Some time ago, my platform providers, they upgraded the system underneath my website, and some of the functions stopped working, so the actual forum part isn't here. And I haven't had the time to rebuild the website because it's more difficult now with the new platform. And the imagery that I used isn't available anymore, so it'd be a real difficult, detailed, long task to reconstruct the existing Oracle website onto the new platform. So I'm afraid it's not fully functioning. It serves the purpose, but certainly there's information there, how to purchase the book. I withdrew it from Amazon several years ago. That wasn't, you know, that they're kind of taking like 30% of the sales, so it just wasn't worth it. The Mysterious Writings website is another place to go, which we mentioned earlier. But essentially, I take payment via PayPal, use my email address, peter.wilder@oraclebook.net. I charge £9.99 for a hard copy of the book, plus postage and packaging, which depends on the location. And that varies with time, but, you know, it could be £6-7 to send something to the US, for example. Or the PDF I can do via email at $2.99. Obviously no postage or packing involved. So it's a good way to start. Get the PDF. If you really like it, then buy a hard copy afterwards. But it's a, you know, because if you are somewhere in far-flung place away from the UK, it could take a couple of weeks to reach you. But with a PDF, you can kind of get working on it straight away.
Yeah, and that's how I got interested in it. I purchased the PDF first, worked on it that way. I actually working on it just in my spare time. I was working on a couple of hunts at the time, and this was one of them. And then slowly, as I was looking at it and loving the artwork, I was like, I just have to get the hard copy. So I went and purchased that from you at one point and had it sent out to me as well. I didn't have to worry about the rush or anything like that because I already had the PDF that I was working on. So, and I could print out a page of that I wanted to, which I could scribble with my own notes and everything like that, which is why I found that very useful as well. So I do want to say thank you very much for coming on today. You've been absolutely amazing. And I just want to give you the opportunity. Is there anything else that you would like to share, obviously, with our recording today?
Well, look, first of all, Robert, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me on. I'm not really certain there's anything that's, you know, screaming to get out. I've been very comfortable with the way you've handled this interview and very professional. And I thank you for that. Yeah, there's nothing really I can think of that I'd like to add any overall message. But, okay, one thing. All I will say is the feedback I've had throughout the last 20 years has been extremely positive, extremely positive. Everybody's loved the book, loved the story, loved the pictures. So if anyone's in any doubt, please be assured you will really enjoy the book just for its own purposes, just for the artwork, the story, the poems, all good fun in their on their own. There's the added bonus that you might win a significant cash prize. And you're going to learn a lot on the journey. So I think that's really all I can say on the subject.
And that's a great way to end it. And we really appreciate you. And I do want to thank you for coming on. You've been amazing. And it's been amazing talking about your book. I wish you all the best of luck with it. And if it does get solved anytime soon, I'd love to have you come back on and we can talk about how it was solved and talk about the whole puzzle in general again. Would you be up for that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. And you have I know it's hot over in the UK right now. It's hot where I am in New Jersey. So get a nice cold drink and chill. And again, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Robert. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your day.